Hey guys, how's things? Well, good. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Coming up, Dr. Yosef Butt, nuclear physicist and watcher of the Iran deal developments, will be on to talk about his thing that he wrote, very pessimistic, in The Hill, Poison Pills in the Iran Nuclear Agreement. Yeah. I really let my wishes get in the way of my point of view here. Looking back on a week ago, how could I have thought that John Kerry did what he said he did, you know? Accomplish what he seemed to have accomplished. Now everybody disagrees on what they agreed about. And they still got a couple of months to screw it up or get it right, but... just like Gareth said back a year ago, yeah, see, they don't mind if this thing fails at all, as long as they can blame the failure on Iran. They don't want to have to take responsibility for failing after working this hard at it. But anyway. But good deal. Yosef, but he understands this thing in excruciating detail. The technology, the Iranian program, the safeguards agreement, the IAEA and the sanctions and the rest. I mean, he says, oh, just ask me about the science. But he knows all about the whole damn thing. So anyway, that'll be on. Rain on my parade a little bit here. I don't know. I guess it seems like if this will be the one thing that Obama ever accomplished other than the Obamacare catastrophe, does he consider that an accomplishment? I don't. Anyway, this would be, I guess, from Democrat eyes, this would be the second thing he ever did as president. And it's a thing that he came into office like he really meant it, saying he was going to do, wished him Happy New Year, and said, let's put the past behind us and see if we can work things out. So I don't know, man. If for only that reason, I'm trying to come up with an ulterior motive agenda for people with power to see this thing through. And I think it's only Obama wants to do it for his own so-called legacy. And then there's everybody who does what he says versus everyone who doesn't, you know? But all the safe politics are on opposing it, which is hilarious from a bunch of people whose talking point is that they're afraid that the Iranians might make nuclear weapons. Well, let's see. Getting them to abide by the deal at all helps to prevent that, you know? But they don't want to look at the facts of what it does. What the deal is, how low their stockpile will be from now on, and the kind of fuel they will make and won't make, and etc. They won't go with the facts, they just go with their narrative, and so I don't know if it really will more likely lead to war with Iran if the deal falls apart. I mean, I still very much doubt that the Iranians are going to decide then, like North Korea, to go ahead and leave the treaty and begin to make nuclear weapons. Although, they would certainly have an argument for it. But, they could say, well, it doesn't matter. We still have a safeguards agreement, and never mind the additional protocol and your possible military dimensions, but you can still continue to do all your accounting of our nuclear material. And the worst they ever did was enrich up to 20% for targets for their medical isotope reactor that America built for them back in the 1970s when their government was a owned sock puppet dictatorship of the United States. But that's not weapons grade. That's just 20%. So it seems like if they just kept their hands up, like their hands have been up since 2003. Okay, you got us digging a hole in the ground at Natanz that we're going to one day make into a centrifuge facility. But still, they were still within their safeguards agreement. They still had 6 months before the introduction of actual nuclear material to declare the thing. So anyway, They put their hands up and open up their books after that, said, go ahead. The only things they haven't accounted for 100% are things that we already know are a bunch of Israeli forgeries and the alleged studies and a bunch of bogus accusations. So, I don't know. And America needs the Iranians and their control of the Badr militias and the others in Iraq, their aid and comfort to the Badr militias in Iraq fighting the Islamic State, that at least, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe if they hate Iran enough, they'll go ahead and side with ISIS, not just al-Nusra. And, you know, the actual guys who are still sworn to Zawahiri. And switch sides in the Iraq war finally outright to the Sunnis against the Shia. But I hope they don't plan on helping Baghdadi take back Baghdad, because it's a big city and George Bush already helped the Shiites take it from the Sunnis. And I mean block by block, the whole damn city. So that's, I don't know, man. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to keep fighting on Iran's side in Iraq while they fight on the jihadist side against the Iranian factions, supported friends in Syria, which is crazy, but hey, what the hell? It's not like they have to explain themselves. Same as on the nuclear deal. No one on TV knows the first thing about it, so the whole discussion is just a discussion of talking points, not of actual facts. Well, you know, the thing is, they really can't take their uranium and start making weapons-grade uranium out of it. They can't really get to work on designing nuclear warheads without everyone knowing. They just can't. So they would have to withdraw from the treaty and the safeguards agreement and basically beat their chest and announce that, yes, we're going to go ahead and make nukes now. Dare you to stop us. In the same way that North Korea did. In the same way that China did. That's what they would have to do to start making nukes. Even under the status quo, they're safeguarded, not quite from womb to tomb, but still. There's no reason, there's never been any indication in the words of Mohammed El-Baradei, the last head of the IAEA, that they've diverted any of their nuclear material to any military or other special purpose, as they put it. So, I don't know, man. Maybe if the deal falls apart, it won't matter. But, then again, I don't know enough about Iranian politics, but it seems like all the, you know, their war hawks, their neocons, their Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and whoever are benefiting from Cold War. Might make it worse. Like the sanctions, for example. They're meant to hurt the Iranian Revolutionary Guards and the worst factions of, you know, the government, Gestapo there. Well, they're the ones who control the black market and oil. They're the ones who make all the money from the black market and all the smuggling, while everyone else is banned from business. It's the same thing, you know, well, tried and true tactic, I guess. Really, for years now. What year is it, 2015? Yeah, so for 10 years now, Scott Ritter and others had alleged that, yeah, the policy seriously is that the moderates are the enemy. The Americans would rather empower the hawks, the better to have an excuse to change the entire regime. They don't want to have anybody to work with over there. The moderates are the enemy. Anybody who can, you know, speak good English on Western television in the Iranian government, those are the people that need to be marginalized. That way it's easier to portray them as all a bunch of loons and therefore targets. But anyway, there's a great piece by Christopher Preble. You don't hear me say that too often. It's a great piece by Christopher Preble about Mao Zedong and how he had said, I don't care if we lose half the population. I'm busy killing them myself. I'll get in a nuclear war with you. And they still didn't do a preemptive strike on Red China. They considered it, but they didn't. Hey, y'all, run out and get a copy of Embedded Alive, First-Person Journalism in the United States of America, 2013 through 14 by Chris Braswell. The book takes a gonzo look at daily life in America. Columns, informational letters, and other marketplace vigilance, a look at drug abuse culture and its marketing, and a series of contemplative and metaphysical essays. Get Embedded Alive, First-Person Journalism in the United States of America, 2013 through 14, in paperback, hardcover, and digital formats at fusepowder.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Speaking of shows, my still new, I think, show is on tonight, the third episode of Eye on the Empire, with myself and Jeffrey Tucker, Chief Liberty Enforcer, Officer, Chief Liberty something, at liberty.me. That's liberty.me. I was just on there approving a friend request. It's sort of a Facebook knockoff, only with lots of great stuff, including pages and pages and pages and pages of articles and all kinds of things. Libertarian social networking costs only $5 a month. Pretty good deal. $4 if you use promo code Scott. Let me know if that's working, because I had one guy who was having a problem with that. And tonight at liberty.me, it'll be Jeff Tucker and myself. And the show is Eye on the Empire. And we'll be talking about some things that I think that you might think are of interest. That's 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 o'clock Texas Time, at liberty.me. Okay, cool. Now, guess what? You should probably turn off the show and go watch the Israel Lobby. Is it good for the U.S.? Is it good for Israel? Conference. Being broadcast live right now from the National Press Club. You don't have to be on Twitter to look at my Twitter feed, and you will see the YouTube, the embedded YouTube of the live stream there. You know what? I sent it to Eric. Let me see if he put it on the blog at antiwar.com. I was hoping that he would. No. But anyway, go to my Twitter feed. It's twitter.com/ScottHortonShow, and you will see that there's an embedded YouTube live player. And it's the Israel Lobby. Is it good for the U.S.? Is it good for Israel? It's being put on by the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, our friend Grant Smith and his great organization there. And then also, I think, the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs, WERMIA, or however you say that. And, man, they had some great stuff on earlier. I was watching. One thing that I learned was that they have an Israeli company is helping with the border wall at the Mexican border. So they have experience in building the giant apartheid wall across the West Bank. Ain't that something? It is something. I admit something has a pretty broad definition, but for me that fits within it, so for what that's worth. And tomorrow. First this still. Check out earmep.org. I'm sure they have all the links there. Or again, check out my Twitter feed, twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. And you can, just page down a little bit and you'll see the embedded player there. Also on Twitter, it's Israel Lobby US, twitter.com/Israel Lobby US. And they have the embedded player for you there too. So I don't know, you know, during the commercials, don't forget to turn me back up again. Tune in, and I'm sure that Grant Smith will have the entire thing. It should be on C-SPAN, but they pulled out at the last minute. They covered the one last year, which was pretty great. But anyway, it's too bad it's not on C-SPAN. But it is at the National Press Club, and it's at twitter.com/IsraelLobbyUS or /ScottHortonShow. Okay. And then tomorrow is the big FFF thing, hosted by Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation and Jeff Frazee from the Young Americans for Liberty. There's an unsung hero of the Liberty movement putting that thing together. And they're going to be basically, you know, be doing the welcome and the introduction. And then the three big speeches are by Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept, Radley Balko of The Washington Post, and Ron Paul, doctor, former congressman, author, and speech giver. So that's going to be great. Greenwald, Balco, and Paul. You may not be familiar with Radley Balco. I think he's probably the least household of those three names anyway, which is, you know, Greenwald and Ron Paul are both world famous, so don't get me wrong. I'm knocking the guy. I'm just saying that if you ain't never heard of him, he's about the best we got on chronicling the rise of the military state. And that ain't to knock Will Gregg. They have a little bit different workloads under the same kind of umbrella there. But Radley Balco, he does some great freaking journalism too. And right up there with Will Gregg. And importantly, at the Washington Post. And as I was saying to Jacob on the show, it's clear from his work, it's not because he sold out and kowtows to them. It's because he was doing such great work on this important issue that they couldn't ignore it, deny it. They had to have some for themselves. That's it. His writing did not start to suck so that he could work for the Washington Post. That just didn't happen. It was not part of the story. He kicks ass over there. So, author of Rise of the Warrior Cop, which you may have heard of. So anyway, that's going on like all day tomorrow. It starts registration, show up, take your seat, schmooze and whatever at 1 o'clock. The speeches start right at 2 o'clock, and then it goes to 6:30, I think. 5:30 or 6 or something. Anyway, so what's going to happen is it's going to be Hornberger and Frazee, and then the three main speakers, Greenwald, Balco, and Paul, and then they're going to do a panel discussion with questions and answers and these kinds of things, and then Hornberger and Frazee are going to wrap it up. So it's going to be a big deal, man. It's at the LBJ Library, the LBJ Auditorium, at the LBJ Library at Dean Keaton, which is 26th Street here in Austin, Texas, and Red River is the cross street, the first main street west of I-35, running parallel to I-35 in Austin. So 26th Street and Red River, just west of the freeway at the LBJ Library Auditorium thing. Registration is free. Go to fff.org, and you can find all the links there. FFF for the Future Freedom Foundation. That's Jacob Hornberger's group, Future Freedom Foundation. FFF.org, you can find the link and check it on out. And so that'll be cool. And I guess, unless something comes up, I'll see you there. That'll be tomorrow. Okay, so I guess that's all the housekeeping I had to talk about. And so hurry up and get on with the show. I don't have too much to say about this, except that it's a thing, which should fit, because I'm almost out of time for this segment anyway. Yousef Butt coming up in just a minute, but, did you see about how the White House is refusing? They're just saying, no, forget it. They will not help evacuate American citizens in Yemen. They're just leaving them. Where the hell is my link here? Desperation for American citizens in Yemen as U.S. refuses to mount rescue. Why do we need these guys again? What the hell is the U.S. government good for again? And they act like, oh, it'll be Black Hawk Down or whatever, you know. There's just no way to get these guys out without some kind of full-scale assault. Well, if that's true, then send in your Black Hawks and your Rangers and get these guys out. But that's a lie anyway. Give me a break. A Michigan family with two toddlers and an infant stranded in Yemen by the U.S. government doesn't give a damn about you in a war that they caused. Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, here on the Liberty Radio Network, noon to two weekdays, Eastern time, that is, 11 to 1 Texas time. ScottHorton.org for my archives. All right, our guest today is Dr. Yosef Butt. He is a nuclear physicist and senior scientific advisor to the British American Security Information Council, BASIC, in London. And he's got this new piece in The Hill, Poison Pills in the Iran Nuclear Agreement. Oh, man, raining all over my parade here, Yosef. Welcome back to the show, sir. How are you?
Good, good. Good to be back.
Very happy to have you here. I should have known better than to be hopeful and optimistic about things. But I really wanted to be on this particular issue just because it's been going on for so long and basically I'm sick of it. So it's my own personal problem. Anyway, the agreed framework as detailed in the fact sheet released by the Obama-Kerry government, it hasn't held up. It's not holding up. Is that correct?
Well, there's different versions of the agreement. The most authoritative is the joint statement by the EU and Iran. And besides that joint statement, there's independent fact sheets, one that Iran released and one that the White House released. So it's just not the details in the White House fact sheet is something that Iran has not signed off on. So basically, there still seems to be quite a lot of work to be done on hammering out the details and seeing what will be in the actual final agreement.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so the Ayatollah was on Twitter, not just the president of Iran, but the supreme leader himself saying, hey, you have to lift all the sanctions on day one of this thing, not as the terms of it are implemented on our side or any other kind of so-called phasing or anything like that. And so that's a pretty harsh position. Are they going to be able to climb down from that as far as, you know, the politics of it, do you think?
Yeah, I actually think this is more political. I doubt the supreme leader is in on all the technical details. But I think he's just, you know, similar to what the hardliners in the Congress are doing. He's mm-hmm. doing an equivalent thing for the Iranian government. But my take on it is that they, you know, the supreme leader said that you'd have to lift the sanctions as soon as there's an agreement. But I think it could be reworded to mean as soon as a deal is actually implemented and going forth to the agreement of everyone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can pen the deal on July 1 and everything gets rolling and everybody agrees that everybody's doing everything they agreed to on September 1, and then they can begin, you know, they can lift the sanctions then. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's some wiggle room in what they're saying, and there's a lot of politics now trying to going into what, you know, forming what will be actually in the final deal, both from the supreme leader in Iran and also folks on the hardliners in Congress on our side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be too pessimistic, but basically, I think the media narrative that was early on saying that, you know, hey, we have a deal already is a bit premature. I think the details of the deal still need to be hammered out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on this detail, where the Iranian side is saying that the Americans have to implement immediately, you're saying that from the time they sign the deal, they really have, you know, it's supposed to kick in 60 days or something like that. So they can, whereas it's sort of true that, as the Iranians put it, the Americans can basically flip the switch on the sanctions and begin to lift them in a very immediate way, just by declaring them lifted, in a sense. They also could really start doing their part of the deal pretty quickly in terms of beginning to dismantle the centrifuges at Natanz they've agreed to, or converting the Fordo facility to a research facility. I mean, that's just a matter of beginning to pull the trucks up and starting to get to work, right?
Yeah, so, you know, things could work on both sides fairly quickly. It's just, you know, what will they actually agree to? So for instance, in the U.S. fact sheet, one thing that's kind of one of these poison pills that I mentioned is that it says the U.N. sanctions would not be lifted until the completion of all these key concerns, which are, enrichment, Fordo, the Iraq heavy water reactor, and the so-called PMD, possible military dimensions. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, the White House fact sheet is saying that the UN sanctions could not be lifted until all these are completed, which would be a big red flag if it's true, because completed could take months to years. And the IAEA has not been able to complete the PMD for, more than a decade. So why should everybody be optimistic that, that'll wrap up in a few months? So that's a big red flag for me. And I think that's something that will probably be hammered out in the coming months.
I mean, this kind of sounds like, just the basic setup of a haggling, like they're faking it. They already have these kind of details worked out, sounds like. I mean, Kerry's not going into this kind of unaware that the possible military dimensions, however they've been characterized to him by his staff, as far as their credibility and legitimacy, they don't have him misunderstanding that those issues could all be resolved at the snap of a fingers by, which it's a long list of accusations there. And we could talk more about that, I guess. You have in your article, you talk about the problems with them, et cetera. But they don't really mean that, right? It sounds to me like both sides staking out a position that they can give a little and compromise by July, just like they've had to have something to more or less pretend to fight about the past couple of months when both sides really knew what they were headed toward, right?
I think that's probably the case. The problem is by putting it in a fact sheet and putting it in black and white, it creates, expectations, especially on Congress. Now, let's say they agree to yield on the PMD, the possible military dimensions, saying, okay, we don't need it to be completed, but we need to start seeing, something we like from you. Then people in Congress may object, saying that you told us in your fact sheet that you were going to get the Iranians to agree to PMD, and now you're yielding on it in the final agreement, and this is not what we expected. And so I think going into the really gory details may have been a mistake to release publicly, at least. Maybe the White House could have shared it with Congress if they wanted to, but completely publicly releasing this when it's not been agreed to by everyone, seemingly, seems to create some problems and some expectations that might not be filled at the end. My own view on PMD is that they'll probably direct the IAEA to be happy with some subset of those, especially as some of them are known to be wrong and fabricated. So I think certainly they can't demand Iran's cooperation on things that are fake, because, how are you supposed to cooperate with being confronted with something that you didn't do?
Yeah, it's really hard for them to climb down, though, from pretending that they're real this whole time as well, though. I could see the Americans sticking.
Exactly.
Disprove this fantasy right now.
Right. So I think what will happen is they've already seemed to focus on three main concerns, neutron transport, and then the initiation of high explosives and the ballistic missile business. But even those three, the problem is the IAEA is not outfitted to, to investigate this type of thing. They don't really know what to do with it. The people there are nuclear material accountancy experts. They're not weapons experts. So they don't, you're asking, as we talked about last time, it's like you might ask the local sheriff to go in and investigate the PMD.
Right.
So,
all right, wait, hold it right there. Hold it right there, Yosef. We got to take this break. Sure. We'll be right back, everybody. Yosef Butt, nuclear physicist. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions, well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 11th in Las Vegas. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Yosef Butt. He is a nuclear physicist and senior scientific advisor to the British American Security Information Council, based in London. And so we're talking about one of the problems with the nuclear deal so far is the possible military dimensions, the alleged studies, the smoking laptop. How do you prove a negative? How do you disprove lies that are just made up lies other than showing that there's no reason to believe they're true and hoping that's good enough? It's kind of Donald Rumsfeldian logic the Iranians and the Americans have themselves caught in here, where absence of evidence is not good enough to be evidence of absence. Am I right?
Well, there may be some stuff in the file that is real. Certainly, you know, for instance, the exploding bridge wire detonators are a real thing that actually Iranian scientists did work on, but it turns out that they published openly on it and gave talks at conferences about it, and that it's a dual-use item. It's something that's not just for nuclear weapons. And this is what I mean, where the IAEA can get tripped up if they don't have weaponization experts on board. So they can get confused and they can say, oh, exploding bridge wire detonators, all we know about that is that they're for nuclear bombs. But hey, no, actually the oil and mining industry also uses these detonators because they're, for some safety issues, they're very good. So, so there might be some stuff in there that's real. There's certainly some stuff in there that seems to be fabrications. And, myself and other scientists have looked at it, and it doesn't, you know, there's mistakes in there, nothing of the quality that you'd expect from national research scientists and stuff that was leaked out, for instance, the Associated Press graphs. So, bottom line is this, the possible military dimensions, even in the best case, it deals with stuff that's in the past, a lot of it fabrications. So why try to sabotage a deal that would restrict Iran's future program over questionable, dubious stuff that's unauthenticated about Iran's past work? So you're basically ruining your own future by obsessing about stuff over the past. So if you want to throw a wrench in the works, you start talking about PMD and somebody somewhere is doing that, or else it's just a negotiating ploy that, at the last minute, they'll lift it off the table as a big concession. So, who knows what's going on there. It certainly doesn't submit to much logic.
Yeah. Except just politics, right? not the truth of the matter.
The thing is,
very
I would
useful
hope
with
so,
a but name but, like but, that, but, possible military dimensions.
Yeah, exactly. So, I would hope that it's politics, but, my fear is that somebody actually thinks that this stuff is really worth pursuing, and they'll actually end up ruining an agreement that would really tamp down Iran. That, Iran is actually willing to do a lot of things. If you look at the joint statement by the EU and Iran, that, this is stuff that both sides have agreed to. It's a joint statement. They're, going just to do enrichment in one facility. Fordow will be turned into international research center. There will be no enrichment there. Various other things. They'll redesign the Arak and restrict their enrichment for 10 years plus. So these are important things. Now, are you going to just torpedo all these concessions that Iran has made over some questionable stuff of PMD, the possible military dimensions, that's not even relevant to the future. So, you know, just borderline idiotic, honestly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was what I was going to get to there after the PMD was just what's not in dispute or what else is in dispute in the different versions of the different tales of the different sides ever since this agreed framework. You know, they're disputing the timing on the sanctions. And
you got the timing on the sanctions and PMD are the two main thing that's in dispute. Then I think there is various other things that need to be finessed, like what will happen. You know, there's different time frames for things. There's things in there that will be monitored for up to 25 years, according to the White House, the mine, you know, the uranium mines and things like that. But other things will expire in 10 years and other things will expire in 15 years. So all these timelines are not in the joint statement. The joint statement just says for a limited duration. So I think the White House has very specific timelines. So I think those might still be revised going forward.
But it sounds like what you're saying, though, is it's not really in dispute that they've agreed to expand monitoring all the way to the mines and womb to tomb for the entire project, even when you're not talking about the introduction of nuclear material into any kind of machines, that kind of thing. They agree on that. It's really just a matter of timing that's in dispute.
Yeah, well, you know, basically what the joint statement says is, you know, the monitoring, the enhanced monitoring will be done for a limited duration, that the additional protocol will be on a provisional basis. This, what the so-called Code 3.1 modified, which is just a fancy way of saying, you know, how early Iran has to alert the IAEA if they're building new nuclear facilities. Mm-hmm. They'll you know, give the IAEA a longer lead time than before. And they also agreed not to make any more enrichment facilities for about 10 years. So, you know, the things in the joint, basically things in the joint statement that Iran and the EU gave out are vaguer, but they're still large concessions. The White House has very particular timelines of 10, 15, 25 years on different aspects of it. But I don't know if I trust the White House as something that's already been set in stone as to those durations. But certainly Iran is ready to make major compromises according to even the joint statement that it gave out with the EU. And the point is, let's not ruin this, you know, over piddling things, honestly, like PMD and sanctions relief. Like, if you are ready to go to war with a country, if you're ready to give all that money and blood to, you know, reduce Iran's nuclear program, why wouldn't you, you know, be flexible on sanctions timing? You know, it just honestly doesn't make sense. If you're trying to achieve the same goal, do you want to do it by sanctions relief or do you want to do it by war? You know, it's
well, and they're already moving the goalposts all over the place. I got in a Twitter argument with the publisher, or pardon me, the editor of Foreign Policy, David Rothkopf, where, and this is going on all over the place. I see now everybody got their Karl Rove talking points in the email that, you know, the real problem here, never mind the pseudo atom bomb program that we've been pretending is a controversy. The real problem is once we lift the sanctions, they're going to give all that money that we stopped stealing from them to Hezbollah. And then what's going to happen?
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. I was gonna come to that too. Yeah, basically, exactly. You framed it correctly. It's moving the goalposts. We had a long period of negotiation with them, with the Iranians, about their nuclear program. Now that it looks like they're agreeing to a lot of major concessions, and their nuclear program could be something that the White House would be happy with, and we could resolve this issue. People are coming up with new things that they're bad people. Well, if they're bad people, why did you bother getting into negotiations with about their nuclear program? You know, it's just moving the goalposts. Yeah, now we're getting closure on the nuclear thing. Let's throw up some more problems that'll keep things from being resolved. And the other issue is there's already sanctions in place for you know, the Iranians being quote unquote bad people. There's already sanctions on them for terrorism and human rights abuses. So all this deal would be referring to, the sanctions relief as far as the U.S. sanctions, is those ones that are nuclear triggered. So it's not as if all the sanctions on Iran would come off, only the nuclear triggered one. So there would still be sanctions on them for human rights and for terrorism. So the people who are making those arguments should know better than what they're saying.
Yeah. Now, hey, listen, on one point of the details here, do I have it right? When they say reconfigure Iraq, did you already say, or would you, does that necessarily mean they're turning it into a light water reactor that produces as waste substances that cannot be used as weapons-grade plutonium fuel for a bomb?
You know, the whole weapons-grade plutonium is an odd way to talk about it. It's just, it'll reduce the amount of plutonium that comes out. It's not weapons-grade until you reprocess it and collect it and separate it from other things. So, it'll still produce plutonium, but it'll be just less.
But it'll be a light water reactor and not a heavy water reactor? Is that the change?
I'm not clear on what the details of what they aim to do with it. But, it's not the problem that it has right now would still, even with Iraq set up right now, would still need reprocessing to extract the plutonium to make something into a bomb. And the same goes with in the future. And my understanding is it'll use low-enriched uranium instead of natural uranium as a fuel in the future. So, yeah, you'll produce less plutonium with it, but Iran can legitimately say that they have more need now for enrichment because they're going to feed it with low-enriched fuel. So, it's a positive development overall. But
I guess my understanding was the point of doing a light water reactor is that the waste is so polluted with other isotopes and whatever that it makes that reprocessing moot.
Exactly. It's much more difficult because you're producing per amount of waste, there's less plutonium overall. So it's a more difficult separation at the end. So it is a positive development, just except for the fact that...
But you're saying theoretically they could still get pure plutonium out of that, or as pure as they need it to make a bomb. It would just be much more difficult, and of course, in both cases, they would need a facility to do that they do not possess at all. I understand that part.
Exactly. And my problem was with the phrasing in the fact sheets of weapons-grade plutonium. It's as if the reactor was by itself producing something that will be ready to go for weapons. So, that's not the case. So,
hey, do I understand right, as long as I'm keeping you into the break 1 minute here, do I understand right that in order to, like, let's say they left it a heavy water reactor and it was producing more plutonium, et cetera, do I have it right that they would have to shut the thing down and basically wait a year for it to cool down a little bit and then take the roof off the whole damn thing in order to get it out of there, and it'd be the kind of massive operation? It's not like they just, turn a faucet and weapon and, pure plutonium comes out kind of thing, right? Is it that difficult to harvest the plutonium out of the reactor?
Yeah, I'm not sure you need to lift the roof off or you could get the waste out somehow, but there certainly is a time for cooling off and majorly a separate facility to do the separation. So that just makes waste that includes plutonium, but it's not as if it's making bomb fuel immediately right there.
But the point being, there's no sneak out from that reactor, even if it was a heavy water reactor. They couldn't get that fuel without everyone in the world knowing that they had to turn it off for a while first.
Right.
And everything.
Right, and then there's ways to detect that too, So.
And isn't it the case that the Russians have had the deal to get any waste out of there and take it back to Russia that they made with the Iranians bilaterally a long time ago, just because the Iranians don't have another way to get rid of it?
Yeah, that's still a question mark. What's going to happen with the Russians? It seems to be a little bit of back and forth. So I think that's something in the under the heading of to be determined with the negotiations going forward. I'm not sure about that.
All right. Well, hey, listen, I really appreciate your time, and I kept you over into the break here. I'll let you go, but it's great to talk to you as always.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Yosef Butt. He is nuclear physicist and senior scientific advisor to the British American Security Information Council, BASIC, in London. Here he is at The Hill, poison pills in the Iran nuclear agreement. We'll be right back. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. So, yeah, I'm him. I thought, you know, the Iraq thing was make it a light water reactor instead of a heavy one. It seemed like it was just implied, though, and I was hoping to get it straight there. Anyway. Warning. The feds have entrapped some idiot into a fake terrorist plot. Feds, John Thomas Booker Jr. wanted to be a suicide bomber for the Islamic State. According to CJ Online, what's CJ Online? The Topeka Capital Journal. All right. And then the best picture they have of him is from his, apparently his eighth grade junior high school picture. I guess he could be a ninth grader in this picture. Maybe. A 20-year-old Topeka man was convinced by an FBI infiltrator into his life, his new best friend in the world, to say he loves Osama. into the handy cam. Say you love Osama, I'll give you $50,000. Say you love Osama. And then he said, I love Osama. Blam! He was going to suicide attack you because of his Islamic extremism. His radical Islam was going to strike if we didn't protect you, says the FBI press release. Who's falling for this anymore? When we are now working on scores of idiots entrapped by their new best friend, the undercover FBI informant, into saying he loves Osama. Someone, please give us a break, man. All right. So, just so you know, you are not free. Okay. And now in this segment, I'm not going to talk about Rand Paul. You know what I am going to talk about? This cool article. It's by Murray Polner. And you might remember that name. He co-edited a book with Thomas Woods. Thomas E. Woods Jr., that is. About the war. Oh, hell. Now all of a sudden, the name of the book is escaping me because I'm unforgivably idiotic. I have it here, don't I? We Who Dared Say No to War. That's it, of course. We Who Dared Say No to War. It's a compendium of great anti-war speeches throughout American history. I think you'll like it. Understanding America's Many Wars by Murray Polner. And he's reviewing here the China Mirage. And you know me, I like to blame Woodrow Wilson for everything in the world, but that's just convenient because I especially hate that guy. The American Mussolini. The ruiner of all things good. But nah, really, everything in history is Theodore Roosevelt's fault. Before is Franklin Roosevelt's fault. Before Woodrow Wilson, FDR's stand-in in the meantime. And, yeah, the American Empire, it kind of goes back. Noam Chomsky, I think, correctly calls it the saltwater fallacy, that your republic hasn't turned into an empire until it's conquered the Philippines, because it had to sail to get there. But, yeah, that's not really a very good exclusive way to define the definition, whatever the hell you call it. It's not the best way to figure out when it's an empire and when it's not. And, you know, come on, it was Jefferson bought Louisiana from the French who didn't own it. And it's been an empire since then anyway. And surely the empire predates World War I and World War II and all of that. Just like Hornberger likes to emphasize, post-World War II, where the national security state became this massive new thing, which is true. The war state, as Mike Swanson calls it. But the empire had been around, and so anyway, I'm going on and on, but the point is that Murray Polner reviewed this book, and it's about how America's ridiculous China policy helped, of course, lead to America's conflict with Japan in World War II. And, of course, the supreme irony of that whole thing is after defeating Japan and forcing them out of China, the power vacuum was filled by Mao, who then was the worst butcher of Chinese people in the history of butchers and mostly just starved them to death. And in the very worst way. By the tens of millions, they died. Although, I've heard it argued, and the 20th century was a mean SOB, so in context, this is arguments that, these are arguments that men are left to make, that, hey, they had to be independent of the Japanese first anyway, even if it was under the communists still. They had to be independent first before they could, you know, be better. Just too bad it was Mao. But think about that. Like, really? That's arguable? And the Japanese were horrible, but, yeah, the communists were worse. Anyway. ISIS in Kansas. That's the big news, according to CNN today. The FBI, again, entraps some idiot. And you know what? There are so many of these. It's been a while since I really, you know, went down the list. I'm used to just letting Trevor Aronson pick up all the slack. He wrote the book on it. It's a great book called The Terror Factory, of course, about the FBI making up plots and busting them. And there were more than 50 then. I think it's more than 50 or 60 now. 55 or 60 now from the last time I talked to him. But you remember probably some famous ones, the gangsters in Miami who were promised $50,000. Like, these were guys with nothing. They weren't even really criminals. They were just nobodies, that's all. Easy to frame up. Dumb enough to participate in it. You know, corrupt enough to participate in it, but still. I'm not saying all these guys are completely blameless, but they're certainly deserve less blame than the people setting them up. That's the point. But you had the Fort Dix plot. The pizza plot, remember that? And then, what was the other one in New Jersey? You had all kinds of fake ones in New York. The subway plot, the Brooklyn Bridge, the JFK airport. There was the Detroit case where that wasn't outright entrapment, but it was such obvious lies by a guy facing 75 years. Just setting these guys up. That one was bad enough. Yeah, Lodi, California, Hamid Hayat. This poor kid in Hamid Hayat, the informant just infiltrated his family for nothing. It's not like they, you know, started it somehow at all. They just picked a family with a vulnerable kid without a mom and just a dad, and the informant became their family friend and called the dad, Dad, and treated the young son like his little brother. And then basically just tricked him into saying he loves Osama. Say it, you love Osama. Fine. Remember, he's the kid where the FBI's putting words in his mouth in the tape. The LA Times released the tape on their website. I hope it's still out there somewhere. Where the FBI agent is putting words in his mouth in such a Mad Libs, haphazard kind of a way that he ends up getting the kid to say that, yes, his grandfather teaches Al-Qaeda how to pole vault in his basement, Al-Qaeda training center in Kandahar. When, you know, of course, his grandfather lives in, I think, Islamabad, you know, certainly not in Kandahar. And anyway, and they convicted him. The father got a hung jury and they had to let him go. But the son is doing 25 years on the most bogus terrorism case. And like he even had as a defense witness, he had a former FBI agent who said, man, to get me to go against the Bureau like this is tough. But somebody's got to speak up for this kid. This is just so wrong. And they still convicted him anyway. After, like, I think they put him on trial 3 times or something. He had 2 grand. I'm almost certain he had 2 hung juries before they finally convicted him. Poor Hamid Hyatt in Lodi, California. Terrorized that whole damn town into thinking that their longtime Pakistani population was a terrorist threat to them and all this. Just poison everything there.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right. I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. I am going to talk about Rand Paul for a minute, but I'm not going to talk about how short-tempered and snot-nosed he is in his interviews, because who cares about that? I already told you I don't like the dude. But anyway, the thing of it is that surrounding all that hype about how he treats his interviewers, he did this interview with Megyn Kelly on Fox News where she confronts him with Charles Krauthammer and the neocon attacks that he's soft on Iran. And of course, his position is he never was soft on Iran, but so he doesn't want to talk about that. But then, so what does he say? He says that, the neocons are wrong. Charles Krauthammer is wrong about me, and he's often wrong. And the neocons, you know, they say that I have the same foreign policy as Hillary Clinton and Obama. I say that they do. They agreed. And then check out how he gets them. They have the same policy as Hillary and Obama on helping the rebels in Libya and in Syria, both of which disastrous policies I opposed. And I think if we bombed Assad like they wanted to, ISIS would be in a much better position in Syria right now. But psh, wow, balloons fall. Congratulations. Rand Paul says something true for the first time in 6 weeks and scores. How can they, what can they argue about that? Her lame attempt, and you could hear her listening very intently with wide eyes to the guy screaming in her earpiece that, nuh-uh, the difference is we should have armed the better people first. And she even says, we should have armed him when it was still the doctors and the lawyers. The doctors and the lawyers, she said, who were leading the Syrian revolution before, you know, the extremists took it over. And he's just going, come on. He won. He kicked Charles Krauthammer's ass. And all it took was him just saying what was the actual truth. Back when he was still weak on foreign policy, instead of playing up to the hawk and conceding every lie from their end, he stood against them on Libya and Syria. It was the best part of his entire time as a senator, this whole time. And when attacked, he resorts to what he actually knows, something that's actually true. Instead, what was he going to say about Iran? I agree with Charles Krauthammer completely about Iran. Please don't be mad at me. Please don't be mad at me. Whatever Israel says about Iran, that's what I say about Iran, which is his new official position on Iran. Any deal must prove that Iran's ambitions, their nuclear ambitions, have been ended. Well, the weapons ambitions that they don't have, or the civilian ambitions that are their unalienable right under the Non-Proliferation Treaty and part and parcel of the entire deal here? An electricity program and a medical program, isotopes for radiation, for dyes, and for cancer treatments. Always with the double talk and the two-step. They finally, he was under fire, and he was attacked not for something he said or how he said it, which is going to be a newsworthy story, I guess, from now on, every day. But he actually said something right completely. But then, so that raises the question, what the hell is he doing? If his policy is concede every talking point to the neocons, appease them in every way, flip-flop on everything he was ever good on, that when they attack him, he should, pull up in his turtle shell and just deny their accusations that he's weak on all the things that they say he's weak on by trying to be as hawkish as them. What good does it do him to do that when they're going to treat him as though he's his father anyway? Why not just, first of all, get right? In other words, reread your dad's speeches and commit yourself to those principles. And then just kick their ass. It's so easy. You guys wanted to back the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and Ansar al-Sharia in Libya. I said don't do it. And now look what happened. You and Hillary and Barack Obama turned the whole damn country into Jihadistan. Talking point scored. One, tell the simple truth. You hawks, Obama and Hillary, agreed that we had to back the revolution against Assad with the clean-shaven chin, the guy that George Bush paid to kill these guys. You wanted to bomb Damascus and drive them out of power, and if you'd done that, al-Nusra and ISIS and Baghdadi would be ruling Damascus right now. He could win the election just by telling the truth. He could turn over a whole new leaf. From now on, I recognize that Charles Krauthammer and Jennifer Rubin are going to always hate me no matter what. That Sheldon Adelson is never going to back my campaign and, in fact, is going to back everyone who opposes me no matter what. So from now on, instead of, kowtowing, I'll go ahead and just tell the honest truth. Sorry for flip-flopping. I'm back to flip again. Here's the truth. Iran is no threat to America. Your talking point is stupid and illegitimate, like your stupid emotions about Iran. Give me a break. America outspends Iran's military by, I saw the statistic the other day, it's 35,000% or something. Give me a break. America is the global hegemon. Iran is, they're semi-autonomous Persistan. That's what they are, under the American Empire. They have a little bit more independence than we like. That does not equal a threat to the American people, as it's defined in our charters. Our country is defined in our charters. Sorry to conflate those things. They're different, but you know what I mean. So here's the thing about him. Why is it a scandal that he keeps yelling at everybody asking him questions? Because they're asking him about his flip-flops. And his best answer is, I never flip-flopped on that. I always said this thing that I'm now saying, which nobody is buying because, come on. It's the internet. We have it. So anyway, it just seems like I always said, if he would just stand on principle instead of trying to appease everybody, he'd still lose, but only with dignity and moving the ball forward for the actual liberty movement in this country, broadly defined, inside and outside of politics. And all this time he's got a few things on his old man. He's younger, and he's in the Senate mostly. And so what he says matters more in terms of politics and power in Washington, D.C. He's a senator. Ron Paul for years was this, basically silent hero to the American public until he ran for president that one guy in every neighborhood knew about. Rand could be fighting for freedom on the national level every day in a way that Ron never could. Well, except when he was running for president, I mean. But anyway.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, so Rand is actually sent. Maybe this is propaganda, but I don't think so. He sent cease and desist letters to all the stations that are running ads against him and accusing him of being soft on Iran. Sending cease and desist letters? Come on, man. You're running for president. You're the top of the world. You can't act like a snot-nosed brat. That's my job. Be gracious, for Christ's sake. Yeah, guess what? The neocons are attacking you and saying you're soft on Iran. Who predicted that? Who could have predicted that flip-flopping on Iran would appease them or not? Who thought that it would? And you know what? I guess there's still time in the campaign. Maybe before. Is it possible that before he's defeated that he'll realize it's not working? And maybe I should just be principled. And at least, you know, I could help discredit the neocons and really win the argument against them in the Republican Party for next time, right? Sort of like how the Reaganites repudiated the Rockefellerites. Although, only sort of. But you know what I mean. The conservatives over the Eastern Establishment Republicans. That, you know what? The neocons, they failed. Here's all the last few times that the American policymakers listened to them on foreign policy, and here are the consequences. Maybe I can't be president, but here's the truth about the nefarious influence of these guys. And, you know, I don't know. Tell the truth about the empire. And see, this is the thing that's really getting under my skin about Rand Paul, is saying that the enemy is radical Islam. Oh, well, for crying out loud. Here we're in a not 1,300-year civil war. We're in a 13-year, so far, civil war, started by George Bush in 2003. And I'm not saying everything was just perfect before that, but certainly in Iraq, it was not a matter of religious war all the time, fighting over who's a heretic and all this kind of crap. Even when it was a massive civil war under the Americans, the religious issue was a matter of who was who, not what they're fighting about. The Islamic State, yeah, they are legitimately more obsessed with, you know, what others believe and how wrong it is for them to disagree with them, that kind of crap. So that much is true. Now, but it's taken America to create this religious, again, sectarian civil war over there. And here, Rand is just wants to say radical Islam. Well, that goes for the government of Iran as well as the Islamic State. And it goes for the Saudi princes and their alliance with the, radical imams there. That kind of blame can get spread around. Talk about, Al-Qaeda and associated groups. How about radical Islam? That's the enemy, radical Islam. But what about people who have extreme religious beliefs but are completely peaceful and don't actually do anything to anybody? Does that count? Are they still the enemy? Just because of how radical they are in the things that they believe? I mean, what is this crap? And of course, you know what it is. It's an alibi for this is all George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and Barack Obama's fault. This is the fault of the American Empire, that after defeating the Soviet Union by outlasting the Soviet Union in the Cold War, instead of being a normal country in a normal time, as suggested by even the neoconservative leader Jean Kirkpatrick at the time, who was Reagan's ambassador to the UN, they decided that this was at Charles Krauthammer, in fact, wrote in Foreign Affairs that this is our unipolar moment. We rule the world. No one can stop us now. We got to find times and places to prove it soon. Keep Japan and Germany down. That was the big threat. Remember that? Japan and Germany now are going to rise again in a new axis against us. They didn't know who to target as their enemy for a while. And they created a giant evil empire, and they bit off more than they can chew, like every other empire ever. They pushed NATO all the way, almost, well, yeah, in the case of the Baltics, all the way to Russia's borders. It turned the Middle East completely upside down, and they brought about anti-American terrorism. They did it. It was blowback from their own stupid foreign policies. Just look at Ramzi Youssef, wrote a letter to the New York Times. No, the damn Serbs didn't do it. I did it. Signed, Ramzi Youssef. P.S. I did it because of your support for Israel and all your killing of all the innocent Iraqis. How dare you? That's what it says. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but not barely, you know. All along, that was what it was all about. So, all he has to do is just say that's the same thing his father said. And you know what? That's why everyone loved his father. If you watch, there's a great documentary. It's called How Ron Paul Watered the Withered Tree of Liberty or something. It kind of goes on the title, but it's great, man. It really is great. In fact, you really should watch it because I think you go, yeah, this is a documentary I've heard of but not seen before maybe or something like that. But no, it gets better and better and better as you watch it. It's just a great thing. You'll watch the whole thing end to end, I promise. It's really good. How Ron Paul Watered the Withered Tree of Liberty or something. You can find the whole thing on YouTube. And in there, that's it. That's the watershed. Ron Paul at a Republican presidential debate in 2007 said that 9/11 was blowback from American foreign policy in the Middle East. We'd been bombing Iraq for 12 years before the war. We'd been bombing them ever since the last war. And that was what helped to generate this blowback against us. And they all feigned to be completely surprised and shocked. And what in the hell is he talking about? And he stood his ground against the bully Giuliani, demanding he retract his statement. And Ron Paul said, no. See, the truth is that if we think that we can just go around the world doing whatever we want without consequence, then we believe that falsehood at our own peril. We should wake up to the fact. And how do you like that? And people in living rooms all across America and later at their office on YouTube watching this said, wow. Rudy Giuliani said, bow down. And this kind old man said, what? No, pardon me. Here's the honest truth that every American knows that none of you guys will ever admit to them. That you got them into this mess. And so people said, I like that guy right there. And Ron Paul was not the greatest politician in the world. I mean, he spent his whole career up there, as one critic wrote to the Houston Chronicle, giving speeches, writing articles, and voting no. He didn't work really hard on politicking, getting other congressmen to go along with doing good things with him, because that would require a bunch of trade-offs with them, and he just didn't want to play that game. So he just got up there and wrote articles and gave speeches and voted no, and it was great as a congressman. So what was I going to say? Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is that the bottom line I'm trying to get to is that Rand Paul could just tell the truth, and he could just say, as his father did, look, history began before September 11th. Began back in 1991, when George H.W. Bush invaded the Middle East. Well, 90. And just tell them the story. and just say, as Ron said, look, it's bad policy. I'm not saying that they did it on purpose, and I'm not saying that I hate America and I love Saddam Hussein. I'm just saying that you don't think these things through, and now look at the terrible mess you got us in. There's no reason to believe that continuing to wage war over there is going to make things better for them or for us. Hey, where's my music? I do that a lot.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Again, as soon as the show's over, head on over to my Twitter feed or twitter.com/ oh, I have it here. Israel Lobby US. And the conference is going on until 5 o'clock. It's in Washington. If you're in Washington, go there. It's at the National Press Club. The Israel Lobby. Is it good for the US? Is it good for Israel? It's being put on by the Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy, and the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs. And I guess others, too. Twitter.com/IsraelLobbyUS. And that's what I'm going to be watching as much as I can anyway. That's our friend Grant Smith, the Institute for Research Middle East Policy at earmep.org. I'm sure you can find the link there too. All right. And then the FFF thing is tomorrow, again, tomorrow afternoon, Saturday at UT at the LBJ Law School. No, at the LBJ Library auditorium thing right there at Red River and Dean Keaton. That's 26th Street. And starts at 1 or 2 or right around there. I guess they go on at 2. Get there somewhat earlier or something. And then it's Glenn Greenwald, Radley Balco, and Ron Paul are giving their speeches there. So that's... Oh, and they're doing a panel discussion with Q&A and everything. So that should be good. Nobody go there and then ask Ron Paul what he thinks about what I say about his kid, please. I would be mortified. God, I hope I didn't just give anybody bad ideas. All right. Anyway, the great Ron Paul, Glenn Greenwald, Radley Balco, and Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation putting on the whole thing as well. And tonight, watch me with Jeffrey Tucker at liberty.me for Eye on the Empire. And we're going to be discussing a few things. I think you'll like it. It's at liberty.me, Eye on the Empire, with myself and Jeffrey Tucker. All right. So let me get to some important Yemen news for you. John Kerry. Man, this guy. Kerry slams Iran. Kerry slams him for urging Yemen ceasefire, insists commercial flights between countries prove, quote, support for Houthis. Secretary of State John Kerry angrily condemned the Iranian government for pushing the ceasefire in the Saudi-led war against Yemen, saying the U.S. is determined to stand with its allies in the region, and accused Iran of destabilizing the region with its efforts. This is Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Kerry went on to insist the Iranian government is obviously supplying... First of all, Your Honor, just look at them. The Iranian government is obviously supplying the Houthis in Yemen, citing commercial flights between Iran and Yemen as proof. Kerry's claims were made in spite of WikiLeaks documents from the State Department affirming for years that the U.S. is well aware that the Houthi faction in Yemen is a local faction and has never been shown to have any significant ties to Iran. And, you know, I've been looking for evidence otherwise, trying to prove myself wrong about that if I can, and I don't see it. Every expert opinion about this that I can find says that that's a bunch of hype. And I don't see anyone saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, they did have a ship full of guns back in February or something. Just nothing like that. I just made that up just as an example of something that I haven't heard. I hear claims, but I don't even hear specific anecdotes. Commercial flights, that's not going to cut it. And hell, why not? Why wouldn't Iran send some of their Quds Force guys over there to offer help to the Houthis if that's good politics for them? I don't know. I'm just telling you, nobody's proven that that's true. And, of course, you can always find the counterfactual where the Americans would always claim the right to intervene in such a situation and back one side against the other. They are. In fact, they're, I think, backing and fighting all sides in this one. Fighting against the Houthis at this point is fighting as Al-Qaeda's air force, just like in Syria. The Houthis are so bad. What's so bad about them? They used to work for the last dictator who worked for us for 25 years or something, right? What's so bad about them that we prefer Al-Qaeda to them because that's what Saudi wants? Because of a talking point that says the Houthis are an Iranian beachhead at the coast of the Red Sea? Is that what this is? John Kerry. And then, listen, there's a thing in foreign policy by Micah Zenko, who, as far as I could tell, I don't know about all of his facts on everything, but he seems like a very decent guy. They say that he's a completely ideological pacifist against all intervention in any of these things. But he, I guess, is enough of a nice young man that he got himself a job at the Council on Foreign Relations. But I've never seen him do anything except harshly criticize American government policy, and I can't think of a time where I read him recommending that the U.S. government kill anybody that I know of, and I'm not, you know, his most avid reader or anything, but he seems like a real decent guy there, Micah Zenko, and he wrote a thing at Foreign Policy saying, hey, make no mistake about it, this is America's war in Yemen, or America's at war in Yemen. And, of course, you could just assume right away and, you know, believe it now and wait a minute, and then you'll know it for a fact later that the Americans are helping run all this offshore from ships and AWACS planes and picking out all the targets for the Saudis and running the whole war, just using them as auxiliaries, which is, you know, nice as a change from America fighting as their auxiliaries. Not that nice, but just a little. U.S. stepping up weapons shipments to aid Saudi air campaign over Yemen is James Rosen at McClatchy Newspapers. The United States appears to be slowly but steadily deepening its involvement in the war in Yemen. U.S. military official said Tuesday that the United States had stepped up weapons shipments to the Saudi-led Sunni Muslim coalition of Arab countries that has been bombing Shiite Muslim Houthi rebels in Yemen for almost 2 weeks. It's a combination of pre-existing orders to our partners and some new requirements, said Army Colonel Steve Warren, describing the arms shipments. Warren told McClatchy the weapons are mainly ammunition and bombs, likely including precision-guided weapons, to compensate for the absence of Saudi or allied foot soldiers in Yemen to provide targeting information. Boy, those are some sophisticated bombs that don't need targeting information, huh? I hadn't heard about those. Anyway, I guess they just call them dumb bombs. But anyway, so there you go. It is America's war. Don't let them call it a Saudi war. It belongs to you two. You know, in a manner of speaking. And then I thought this was funny. Yemeni Al-Qaeda offers 20 kilograms gold bounty for Shiite leaders. Declares the Houthis and Saleh the two heads of evil. So Saleh is the guy who used to be the dictator there, who took orders from us and waged war against the Houthis, but I guess he's sort of one of the Zaydis and maybe never fought on that hard. And now he's got divisions of the army that are loyal to him that are backing up the Houthi takeover of the capital in Sana'a and now all the way down to Aden, the Gulf city, or the port city. But anyway, so I just thought it was funny that Al-Qaeda is offering gold as a reward for these Houthi guys, and then maybe the American Delta Force guys could be like Three Kings or whatever. They could go over there and get America and Saudi and Israel's enemies among the Houthis and turn them over to Al-Qaeda for the gold reward. It'll probably come in a big sack with a dollar sign on it. And then it'd be them paying our guys for a change. A lot lost in the poor delivery there, I admit. All right. But you should know that lots of real people are being exploded to death over there. The American government and Saudi government working together to do it, including they bombed an elementary school. And there are many other reports of young, innocent, extra innocent casualties. I mean, civilians supposedly are innocent in these things anyway, but we're supposed to look the other way. But how about the children of these people? Is that all right? But of course, then they go, oh no, the situation there is terrible. America, do something. Why won't the world do something instead of, this is what you get for doing something? Red Cross, catastrophic situation in Yemen, port of Aden. Saudi ally shell city as fighting continues. And again, in that McClatchy story, Obama won't rescue the American citizens that he's gotten stranded there in this conflict either. Anyway, see you Sunday morning on the radio in LA or back here on Monday. Thanks, guys.